Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning, it's 8:59 and you're tuned to KBOO Portland. Coming right up, it's Veterans Voice Radio today. Marvin's ready to maybe take your calls at the mid-break. And then at 10 o'clock, it's Radio Zine featuring an interview with Give Us Shelter, a group that's walking to Salem and from Portland to discuss housing justice. At 10:30, Film at 11 welcomes cinematographer Eric Edwards to discuss J.T. Leroy. And at 11 o'clock, Pacific Underground will be here having a discussion about Asian and Pacific Islander Heritage Month. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by members' support, if you didn't know. And you can become a member. You go to kboo.fm on the web or use our mobile app and click on Donate. Thanks for taking care of that. And here comes Veterans Voice.
Well, how to do, Private Willie McBride? Do you mind if I sit here down by your graveside and I'll rest for a while in the warm summer sun? I've been walking all day, Lord, and I'm nearly done. And I see by your gravestone you were only 19 when you joined the Glorious Fallen in 1916. Well, I hope you died quick and I hope you died clean. Or Willie McBride, was it slow and obscene? Did they beat the drums slowly? Did they sound the fife lowly? Did the rifles fire o'er ye as they lowered ye down? Did the bugles sing the last post in chorus? Did the pipes play the flutes or the forest? And did you leave a wife or a sweetheart behind? In some faithful heart is your memory enshrined. And though you died back in 1916, to that loyal heart are you forever 19? Or are you a stranger without even a name, forever enshrined behind some glass pane in an old photograph torn and tattered and stained and fading to yellow in a brown leather frame? Did they beat the drums slowly? Did they sound the fife lowly? Did the rifles fire o'er ye as they lowered ye down? Did the bugles sing the last post in chorus? Did the pipes play the flutes or the forest? Well, the sun's shining now on these green fields of France. The warm wind blows gently and the red poppies dance. The trenches have vanished long under the plough. No gas and no barbed wire, no guns firing now. But here in this graveyard, it's still no man's land. The countless white crosses in Utwitna stand to the man's blind indifference to his fellow man, and the whole generation who were butchered and damned. Did they beat the drum slowly? Did they sound the fife lowly? Did the rifles fire o'er ye as they lowered you down? Did the bugles sing the last post in chorus? Did the pipes play the flutes of the forest? And I can't help but wonder, now Willie McBride, do all those who lie here know why they died? Did you really believe them when they told you the cause? Did you really believe that this war would end wars? Well, the suffering, the sorrow, the glory, the shame, the killing, the dying, it was all done in vain. For Willie McBride, it all happened again, and again, and again, and again, and again. Did they beat the drum slowly? Did they sound the fife lowly? Did the rifles fire o'er ye as they lowered you down? Did the bugles sing the last post in chorus? Did the pipes play the flutes of the forest? Did the bugles sing the last post in chorus? Did the pipes play the flutes or the forest?
Please stay tuned for Veterans Voice. KBOO programming is made possible for KBOO member listeners and support from the Portland State University Hatfield School of Government, offering a master's degree in health administration for those who want to make healthcare equitable through quality leadership and effective policies. More information online at pdx.edu/Hatfield School. Marvin?
Portland calling. Sisters and brothers, welcome to Veteran Voice Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM in the Portland, Vancouver area, and 104.3 FM in the Willamette Valley, and 91.9 FM in the Columbia River Gorge, or on the World Wide Web at KBOO.FM. And if you're interested in hearing some of our old shows, you can go to kboo.fm/veteransvoice, one word. I'm Marvin, and Tammy's engineering for me, and that's great. I want to first thank Kent and Tave Faze Drake for being the pitchers for me on last month's show when we were in our pledge drive. They did a great job, and you know, I really thank them for doing it. Today I'm going to talk about a lot of things, and I was really angry when I heard about Alabama's abortion law. What was it, 25 white guys voted the law in? They have no, just, You know, a woman's body is a woman's body, and she can, that's her body. She can make those decisions. And to have them, those men, make the decision over their bodies is just horrible. And then Missouri came up with theirs, and there's a lot of others. You know, what they're trying to do is get it to the Supreme Court and get rid of Roe v. Wade. That's what they really want to do. And they're playing to their base. They want to keep getting elected and elected over and over, and nothing changes. And with voter suppression, you know, that gives them even a bigger chance of getting reelected, which is nothing changes then. It just gets more and more towards a totalitarian government. And that's what this country may be headed for with Trump in the office, who lost the popular vote but won the Electoral College, and then he gets all this power when the American people didn't vote him in. And he has all this power that he does the stupidest things in the world. He's just not qualified to be, you know, to be the president of this country. And I'm going to talk about that a little more when I get into some of this other stuff. You know, on May 4th, 1970, the Ohio National Guard killed 4 students and wounded, I can't remember how many, but there was quite a few. And not one of them got convicted of anything. They completely got away with it. And my friend Joe Lewis was one of the first ones that they shot, and they shot him in the hip and in the foot, and he still has trouble with that. So, you know, you look at that, and then Mississippi State, those young black students, they were shot not long after that, and they almost had shootings in the colleges all over. And Laurel went to UC Santa Barbara, and a kid got killed there. So you just look at it and think, you know, people think, well, our military wouldn't turn their guns on us. Whew. Look at history. They do it all the time, you know. They do it all the time. And so we got to be careful, because the police is their first line of support. The military's right in there too. And then you have these other groups around, you know, the white supremacists, the Ku Klux Klan, the Nazis, you know, working with the police, because right in this city, you had the police talking to the so-called Patriot Prayer and the so-called Proud Boys, and they were making, you know, being told where to go and what, you know, all that. And I read in the paper one of the Proud Boys that had been arrested, and you know who bailed him out? A contractor for ICE bailed him out. They still have a warrant out for that big guy, Tiny, but he's not. He went back to American Samoa, so he's not here, and there's a warrant out for his arrest. But you know they're not going to go all the way to Samoa to get, you know, this guy. But this whole thing, you know, you look back, and there's always these groups that side with the police against the majority of people. Portland is a pretty progressive city on a lot of things. And when the police protect these groups like they protected the so-called Patriot Prayer and Proud Boys, that's just saying to the people of Portland that we're going to protect these people, even though they're violent, and they are violent. Look what they did to Cider Riot. They went there just to cause trouble. And before, on Joanne's show, had the owner of Cider Riot, and he told about the vandalism on their building. And that's happened in Nazi Germany in the 30s and the early 40s. They did the same thing to the Jewish community. It wasn't just the Jewish community. They arrested gypsies. They arrested homosexuals, mentally ill people. So they did a lot of stuff like that. And to have these people running around in our city, being protected by the police, like Joanne said, that's just not acceptable. And it's not. It's not acceptable. When the city of Portland was called by George H.W. Bush, Little Beirut, you know, I took that as a compliment, you know, not as a slap, you know, I took it as a compliment. And they always protect those people. They really do. They protect them. Even though they're violent, they protect them. And there's more of us than there are of them. So, and one guy called in to Joanne's show and said that he had spotted them, one of those guys coming into Portland, and got his license number and everything, and called KABU, which is good, but you know, the guy still came. I think it was the leader, the supposed leader, Joy something or other. Joy Gibson was his name, and I think it was his truck. And the guy, like I said, called KABU. So, and that's a good thing, call KABU, because if you call the cops, they're not going to do anything. They're not going to do anything about it. When they started the trouble at Cider Riot, they didn't show up till it was all done, and the so-called Patriot Prayer and Proud Boys were gone. So, one young lady got knocked out and hurt by one of those fools. I think it hit her with a club or something, which is, and I'm pretty sure they got it on tape. And the lawsuit that they have against those people is a good thing, because I remember when Southern Poverty Law Center did the lawsuit against the Ku Klux Klan and the Nazis, and just drove them out of business. And the people in Idaho, the woman and her husband, who was African American, you know, they got that land, if I remember right. They took everything from that guy and his Nazis. And then also when Mulligata Sarraw was murdered by the white supremacist, that lawsuit just destroyed them also. So this lawsuit is really important. With this rise of totalitarianism in this country, you know, we got to be prepared. And the police aren't our friends. Antifa, they're right there on the front lines, and they seem to be pretty well organized. So, you know, I just wanted to talk about that. They're really, 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 really well organized. And I want to talk a little bit about Bill Byers. Bill Byers was my partner, friend for a long time, and he was a Korean War veteran, and he was also a atomic veteran, which he, when that was happening in the 50s, they took all these troops down to Nevada, the Nevada nuclear test site, and they witnessed the explosion of atomic bombs, and they were pretty close to them in ditches, and they had these goggle things on, and they blew up the bombs, and then they walked these troops into it. And I think Bill saw four of them blast. And what Bill's job was, he was 2 years, he was, you know, he was drafted for 2 years, and his job, if you've ever seen any film on the bombs, they built houses and they put dummies in them, and they had animals there, and just the cars and trucks and all kinds of different things. And what Bill's job was, after the bombs went off and that all got tore down, him and his engineer company would go in and rebuild those. They would put the pigs and the other animals there for the next bomb. And Bill did that, like I say, for, I think he saw three or four bombs go off. And he told me one time, he said that, boy, he said, you know, if anybody does that again when they drop the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, he said that if they ever do that, get into a war where they're going to use these nuclear weapons, he says, we're goners. He said, we're goners. And he was very active in the anti-nuclear movement as an atomic veteran. He was very active in it. And he would talk to me about it a lot. And when he was going to be sent to Korea, he only had like 6 months or 7 months left in the army. And he had to go before the, I think it was the captain or somebody, he was up for being promoted. And he got in there and, you know, played their little salute game and all of that. And the captain asked him, soldier, what's your plans for the military, for the army? And Bill said, to get out. He says, I want out of the military. And of course, he never got promoted. And the next week, his name was on a list to be sent to Korea. And with only that, you know, that little time left, they usually, you know, don't send you. So Bill got over, he went to Japan, he met his brother in Japan, and then he went to, got on a ship, or I don't know if it was a ship or an airplane, and got into, it was a train. He got into Korea, and then he had to take a train up to where his company was. And he said when he got off the train onto the dock there, he said the first thing he saw was a older Korean man with his leg gone and a little boy with him begging. And he said, that's the first thing I saw in Korea. And then he got up to his company, and his job was hauling ammunition and supplies up to the troops. That was his job, which is a very dangerous job because of ambushes and everything. And when Bill did his time and it was time for him to leave, he went back to the train station to catch a train down to where the port was where he was going to leave. And he said, when I got there and went to the dock where the train was, he said there was another older Korean man, and he didn't have a leg. And Bill said that the things he remembered most about Korea was the people, the way they were treated. You know, they were treated like second, third, fourth class people. And he really had a problem with that. Bill wasn't racist at all. And he was, like I said, he was on this show for a long time. And we used to go to different places to talk. We went down to protest at the Nevada test site. And we put up a, when we went down, there was a lot of people and a lot of vets went down with us. And we set our tents up. And Bill and I shared a tent. And during the night, he was having a bad dream. And he hollered, "I'm going to knock you back to last week." And I thought, what is he talking about? So when he woke up, I was outside, and he woke up, and I said, "What were you dreaming last night? You were going to knock somebody back to last week." And he says, "I don't know." He says, "I can't remember." And then when Bill passed away, he had a really bad heart, and his heart just gave out, and that's what happened to Bill. But he was really important to me and important to the atomic veterans and important to our state and to the radio station here, because he always donated money during pitch time. He always donated lots of money during that. You know, I want to get back to basically Trump and his group of folks like Miller, Pompeo, and Bolton. Bolton, I think, had been in the National Guard. I think, maybe not. I know that Pompeo had, I think he had gone to West Point. And then Miller, he didn't go. He was too young. But right now, look at the trouble Trump has caused in just the 2.5 years or so that he has been in the White House. We've been to war for the last 18 years. We lost so many young troopers, not just in the Middle East, but in Africa too. And right now, he's beating the drums. He says he doesn't want to go to war with Iran, but he's got all these people around him who do, especially Bolton. Bolton is a horrible person. He is very, very far right. He doesn't like any country in the world but this one. So we have this problem. They have us going, sending all these troops to the, I'm not sure, it was like supposed to be 120,000 troops. I think maybe Iraq, I'm not sure. But we have Afghanistan, we have Iraq, we have the South China Sea, and North Korea. That's how messed up Trump is. He's messed up. He's got all this trouble going on. And the U.S., if we get into a fight with Iran, they're not a little country. They're a pretty big country. And Iran said the other day that they don't want a war. but they're prepared. What a horrible disaster that would be if our troops are sent to fight Iran. To fight Iran. And for what? For what? A mixed up plan that Trump has in his mind and his right wing followers? They want to go to Iran? Of course, they won't go, and their kids won't go, but our kids will go. I was watching a video about Iraq, and it was a medical, folks on the medical. So I want to talk about that in a little bit. Tammy, can you go ahead and play the next song for me? That song, Ohio, was written by Neil Young. And that's for my buddy Joe Lewis, who I told you was one of the survivors that was shot at Kent State. And that's for him. And he goes back every May 4th for the programs and different things that they have at the university. He talks and he does different things like, you know, such as that. And they were planning, he said it was very, very emotional this year because they were planning the 50th anniversary of them being, the four students being killed and the people being wounded. And he said it was very, very emotional because it's the 50th anniversary. And so Joe had a You know, he said it was pretty hard. So he's a good guy, and, you know, Oregon's a better place with Joe in it. I'm going to go back to talking about these hotspots that Trump has got us in. I didn't add Venezuela, but Venezuela's definitely on the list. And China and Russia both are helping Venezuela. And Trump and his cabal don't like that. One of the things that people... It's oil. It's oil. Venezuela is the oil. They got tons of oil, lots of oil. And that's basically what they want. They want to get somebody in there that toes the line and lets American companies go in and run the oil fields. That's what they want. It's not that it has nothing to do with their system. It has nothing to do with Maduro. They want to get in there and they want to set it up for the oil. There's just, you know, no doubt about it. They don't care what the, you know, socialist or communist or whatever the leadership is, as long as they toe the line and they get American companies in there. And how many people have to die for that oil that Venezuela has? And besides that, they don't like Russia and China being in what they call their back door. It's okay for Americans to have all their troops surrounding different military posts and camps surrounding Iran, and then they have in Europe. That's okay. That's Russia's backyard, and that's Iran's backyard. And if the United States stupidness of Trump and his cabal, they're waiting for something to happen so they can do something. They've done it before to get into the different countries, just go to war. As far back as the Spanish-American War, when the main in Cuba blew up, the first thing that were blamed for it was the Cubans. But they found out that the boiler blew up. You know, this is after all the dead and, you know, taking the Philippines from Spain, that it was the boiler. It wasn't the Cubans blowing anything up. They used that. Just like Hitler used going into Eastern Europe because he went to protect the Germans living in those areas. It was all made up. And Bush, H.W., no, it wasn't, it was this George W. Bush. When he sent troops into Iraq, there was no reason to send troops into Iraq. None. They used the lie about nuclear weapons, and there was none. And people were telling them, there's none. There's none in there. But he used that pretext to go into Iraq. Plus, they got oil. I don't know if they're huge oil, but they do got oil. So that they used that lie. Vietnam, they used the Gulf of Tonkin. That was a really a messed up deal. That was a really messed up deal. Because when the ships went in there, They were signal intelligence. They were copying messages being sent between different stations and all that. That's what they were doing. And Vietnam says they were in their waters, and the U.S. says, no, we weren't in their water. And the U.S. fired first. When the boats, the PT boats, were coming out, they fired on them. And that's when Vietnam fired back. So that, you know, they caused that by doing that. And the two different stations picked up a message. And one of them, they broke, the code was broke. They read the message, and they, one of them, it was at Phu Bai in Vietnam, just south of Hue, and they had one meaning, and then the other station down in the Philippines picked up the same message, broke the code, and their interpretation was different. And so they have different classifications of the intelligence. If it's really important, it goes real fast. If it's nothing, you know, it goes slower. And so they got the first message from the guy in Phu Bai, which they made a mistake when they were reading the message. They interpretation said some words different than what it was, where the guy in the Philippines did it right. And so they got that message back in D.C., and they got the other message too later, and they sent the ships back into that area. And again, Vietnam sent their boats out, but they didn't go all the way out. And the sonar guy on the Turner Joy ship, he was young and he was really inexperienced, and he was seeing different things on the radar, and he said, they're attacking us. And it was just anomalies. And so they went and woke up the guy that was the best at doing sonar, and he went down there and he listened, and he said, it's nothing. But they used that pretext to go into Vietnam. And how did that work out? Not very good. You know, 3 million Vietnamese dead, 58,300 Americans dead, with still, I think, 700 missing in action. So that didn't really go too good for them. But and now in the South China Sea, China said claims over some of these little atolls and different little things like that in South China Sea. And they, you know, they claim that area. And the U.S. and France and Japan, Vietnam, Philippines, Malaysia, I think, those folks have not the U.S., but those countries say no, that those belong to us. China has its ships out there. They built these islands up, and they put military around them. So there's the U.S., I think U.S. and France and Britain sent their warships in there to test them, you know, what was going on, to test. And if something happens, and there almost have been Chinese ship and an American ship almost collided, but all it takes is one thing, and they'll jump on it. they'll jump on it, because that is a way that ships go from China and Vietnam and all those countries. They go through the South China Sea. And the Philippines also has a claim on some islands. And Duterte, the dictator of the Philippines, he's crazy like Trump. So that is really a problem. But China won't mess around. China has a pact with Russia. China and Russia did military maneuvers together on sea and on land. China is huge. Huge. They have a huge army. They have everything we got, including the nuclear bombs. And Trump's tweaking their nose on these tariffs, and it's really not going to hurt China. May hurt them a little bit, but not much. It's hurting the farmers, you know, here in this country, and different businesses in this country that got their supplies and got their different things they needed from China. And even here in Oregon, there might be a problem, and that's with the some nuts that they grow here in Oregon, and most of them went to China. Soybeans. China bought about 60% of all soybeans grown in the United States. So those farmers are getting it. It's a big, big problem that Trump has started by doing that tariff. China owns so many U.S. bonds. And they've been selling down some of their bonds. I believe that they own more American bonds than any other country. And if they'd called those bonds in, boy, there'd be a real problem. But they've been selling them down and using that money to, you know, go into their economy and everything. So, but the U.S. promised these farmers that he was going to help them. You know, he was going to give them money. And these farmers are coming up and saying, I've called that organization so many times to, you know, to get on that list to get some money, and nothing's happened. Nothing's happened. So they've got silos full of soybeans. And they were asking them, are you going to vote for Trump? And they said no, but they did last time. So that's a real problem. And with China and the U.S. butting heads right now, it's going to be, if one of them makes a mistake, they're going to fight. They're going to fight. And China, like I said, has a military pact with Russia. And Trump's, you know, saying how much he loves Russia and all that. Russia will go with China. There's just no, you know, there's just no doubt about it. So that could be really a problem if that happens. So we have to really be careful. They have to really be careful about what these hot spots, North Korea, South China Sea, Iran, Iraq, Afghanistan, Venezuela. I don't think in the history of this country there's ever been anything like this at all. We've been at war for 18 years. Our troops have been dying for 18 years. I was watching this video, a documentary about a medical company in Iraq. They're a forward hospital, and they were talking. It was really interesting. They were talking about the job they were doing, and most of it was talking about medevac helicopters and the medics that flew on these helicopters with them. And I was really surprised, not surprised, but it was very interesting that three of the pilots for these medevac were women. They were women pilots, and they were flying these sometimes really dangerous missions to go out and bring back the wounded and the dead. They were talking about how dangerous it was to do that. Even one of the helicopters got shot down. The medevac helicopters was shot down, and the medic was hurt really bad. And when they brought him back to the hospital, the medic that was on the helicopter, he was hurt really bad, and they didn't know if he was going to live or die. And he finally did pass away. He did die. And they were flying out to these little bases that they have set up there, and all these infantrymen, both Marine and Army. And they were showing what they did when they would get out there. They would land, and the medic would jump off, and he would run to wherever he was needed. And they didn't show any women medics, but they do have women medics. And they would go out to get these people back, take them back, the people who had been wounded. And most of them had been hit in the legs, are from the hips down, but if it was an IED, their whole body was hurt. And there was two helicopters would go. One of the helicopters was the medevac helicopter that brought the wounded back, and the other helicopter was to bring the body bags back. And there was a lot, you know. American public, they don't know the death and destruction that's going on in these countries. They had one Marine he had to bring in, and his legs got blown off by a mine. And both of his legs were blown off, and he did live, but he was really in bad shape. The medic that they brought back, there was another medic that was on his chest, giving him, you know, the punching on it, pushing on his chest to get him to keep breathing. And when they finally got him to the hospital, like I say, this medic was on top of him just trying to keep him breathing. Like I said, that he died. He did die. And it just seemed like the whole day they were flying out and bringing somebody back that had been wounded or had been killed. These medics and these helicopter pilots. Just, and then the doctors and the nurses were working on these guys. You could look at them and tell that they were just beaten up by all that they had to do and all that they had to see. And that's what a war is. That's what a war is. Some of these soldiers were born after 9/11. They were born after 9/11. Some of them that are there One kid was 18 years old that got killed. The government doesn't think about that. They just kind of put it off that they don't think of their troops as people. They think of them as tools. Tools to be used for what they want to do. And Trump has no thinking value. You know, he just doesn't do it. He just doesn't have it in his personality of empathy. He has no empathy. He doesn't know how to run a country. He really doesn't know how to run a country. If he gets us into war, well, we're in war right now, but it gets us into a bigger war with either China or Iran, there'll be more dead. The more people go in the ascent, the bigger the group of people are, the more they're dead. The dead come back, dead and wounded. Those infantry people were mostly young. Some of the sergeants were only like 21, 22 years old. That's young. I don't know what the average age of troops in Iraq and Afghanistan, you know, in Syria. Syria is another really hot spot. And that one, I think it was Heather McCoy's show, talked to a man who wrote a book. Maybe it wasn't Heather's show, but they were talking about the torture of dissidents, my mouth dry, that they arrested and put in these prisons. And they talked to some of the people who had gotten out, and they talked about how horrible it was, the torture, the rape, the beatings of the people who were arrested in Syria. And they talked about how when they'd come out of their cells, there would be bodies on the floor outside in the hallways. If that's not a war crime, I don't know what is. You know, I don't know what is if that's not a war crime. My computer keeps going down, Tammy. And, yeah, we're just about done. We'll be back on June 21st at 9 a.m., and there it is.
Yeah. Good morning. You are tuned to KBOO Portland, your community radio station. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Dark Side Cinema. Open every night and featuring independent foreign and art house films, The Dark Side is located at 215 Southwest 4th Street between Madison and Jefferson Avenues, unfortunately in Corvallis, Oregon. So Portland listeners can't patronize the theater very easily. But if you're in Corvallis, you have an option. More information and showtimes available online at darksidecinema.com. And now stay tuned for Radio Zine featuring an interview with Give Us Shelter, a group that is walking to Salem from Portland for housing justice. Stay tuned.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of My Story, My Superpower storytelling show on Wednesday, May 29th at 7 p.m. at the Intel Hawthorne Farm Campus in Hillsboro. My Story, My Superpower features 10 storytellers who will share their stories of courage, hope, and resilience to raise the awareness of mental health as an integral part of individual, organizational, and community wellness. Again, that's My Story, My Superpower storytelling show on Wednesday, May 29th at 7 p.m. at the Intel Hawthorne Farm Campus, 5200 Northeast Ilum Young Parkway in Hillsboro. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Bodie Phelps Angelversary and Protest on Friday, May 24th at 11 a.m. at Gresham City Hall. Bodie Phelps was 22 years old when two Gresham police officers shot and killed him on May 24th, 2016. The gathering remembers Bodie Phelps with speakers, flowers,